Hey guys, welcome to episode 237 with my guest Amy Shira Title. Elad, I think you were the first person to suggest that I podcast Amy. So I want to dedicate this episode in part to you. And I also want to thank for your wonderful recent emails. Well, Mark H. I met in Honolulu and he turned me on to a great band and I really enjoyed chatting with him. It was so great hanging with everybody in Hawaii, and I'm sorry that I wasn't able to get an episode out last week. But that was why. I think I said that in my last intro, so this probably is not coming as a surprise or shock to anyone. I also want to thank David and Scott for your wonderful emails. And then I want to thank Amanda M. and, interestingly, Amanda M. Two totally different, unrelated Amanda M's who wrote me wonderful emails this week. And I think that's it for now. I want to encourage you to enjoy this episode. I think you will. Amy is a very bright, funny, wonderful person. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Now it just feels creepy.
No, I just mean, are you getting good. The right sound levels?
I'm getting the right sound levels.
Okay, good.
I'm all set.
Because I can never figure this out for man stuff. I just, whenever I wear like a high, because I shot video this morning, I was like, okay, well, I don't have a shirt to clip the mic on.
So I did
the bra thing.
Yep.
I was like, I really hope this picks me up at all.
Yeah. So. And did, but they probably could hopefully measure that, or they were just
I'm a one woman operation, I don't know what sound is. I thought you meant you went somewhere
they can tape it within the right thing
so this is just me shooting videos crossed. I was like, here's hoping it doesn't sound too bad. I think the fact
that you have a microphone anywhere near your body and not just on a computer or on a camera, you're already way ahead of the game.
But
what did you shoot this morning?
Today I did this really, really cool thing. What is it? Here's my memory. Welcome.
Perfect. Me too.
It was the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter did a topographical map using the laser altimeter and also matched that with stereo images from two narrow angle cameras and made a 3D topographical map that shows proof in the topography of Apollo 11's descent stage, exactly where it should be. So it was just like really cool proof of landing on the moon in topographical maps. And the other one I did was a 1968 report about Saturn V derivatives. So it's like looking at all these like ways to extend that rocket to do like 100,000 pounds to orbit.
Oh, wow.
And like deep space missions and all this cool stuff. It's just like, it's just one concept study, but it's still like, okay, this is actually kind of cool. So I did both of those.
And you said it's off of a 1960 report.
Yeah. It was two engineers at the Marshall Space Flight Center in 1968 were like, well, we have all this infrastructure and all these facilities to build and process the Saturn V. Like, we should keep going with this. So let's see what we can do based on the core rocket to make it bigger and better.
Yeah.
That's cool. It would have saved us a lot of money, but we didn't do that. we don't do a lot of things.
Thanks, everybody, for totally ignoring that.
Yeah.
Now, you just said process. Will you tell our listeners where you're from?
I am from Canada. Mm-hmm. And it's this is not a thing that I ever noticed until I was only recently I was doing a shoot and they had to keep telling me to say process, which doesn't...
First of all, say whatever you want.
But yeah, it just doesn't come naturally to me. Yeah. It's sort of like, and I definitely, because I live here, will mix the two up.
Yeah,
and it's like, I'm not even really aware
of it. I do stuff like that. Yeah. And I don't, like, people say like, do you say neither or neither? And I'm like, do I have to choose? I think I might say both.
Which one is which? Neither or neither?
I think you can say either one, right?
I'm not even conscious of what I say.
Yeah.
But I was doing neither.
Yeah. Okay, I must say me.
I think neither, but I think...
Yeah. But I feel like I've said neither this nor that.
I think it depends on like the instance. Yeah. But I was also in the same shoot. I had a director say, can you do that whole read again? Because you sound like you're trying to sound Canadian. And I was like, you know, I'm from Canada, right? Like the outs and the abouts, like they do slip out and I'm not conscious of it. But I hear it now, and it's just like, this is weird.
I just don't think, but was it a thing where for some reason you weren't allowed to not be American?
No, it was a contract for a company that's show is not actually being made anymore, which is unfortunate. But yeah, they just wanted it to be there. It's an American company, American centric mm-hmm. audience. So they mm-hmm. wanted it to be, I mean, they wanted control over all kinds of things.
I hear you.
Usually when I do things, it's like you show up with your hair and your makeup done, you'll be fine. We'll just pop you on camera because like I'm the expert, right? This is one of the few times I've ever been like talent, quote unquote, is like not fun. And, you know, wardrobe and hair and makeup was all done. I'm just like, this feels like I'm playing a caricature of myself.
Yeah, God, I could really
and
see that.
Being told to speak with a certain inflection. I'm like, I'm not an actress. Like, if this is what you wanted, hire an actress. Why am I here?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Hire an Amy type.
Yeah.
You can use that in the casting description. Yeah. That is a tough thing to get used to. And I think that's something that I sort of go between being a role or being myself on stuff. And it is always such a pleasure when I think some people hate when they're told to arrive hair and makeup ready, which because it adds on extra time for you at home or whatever.
Well, it's also because I'm not very good at it.
But you look great.
Well, thank you. But, you know, I do what I do for my own life, but that doesn't necessarily translate to camera. Like, but I don't know contouring is.
Well,
so when they're
agreed.
We need you
Understood.
To have like matte skin, I'm like, I don't even wear foundation.
Yeah.
Like, I just put on a lot of eyeliner. That's basically it. So when they're like, just come with everything ready. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that's all very fair
and,
enough.
Like, hair is just a frizzy mass most days.
Right.
And like the bangs curl unevenly. It's just like, I don't know, whatever.
But
whatever it's doing it now.
So. Yeah. Well, if you look great. So I would have assumed that you sort of had the look that you wanted to present. And that's what's tough about, like, again, as you were saying, when you're yourself and then you go in, because I've totally had that happen to me where I'm like, I'm me. And they're like, okay, so great. We're going to do this kind of a lip, these eyes. We're going to curl your hair. So it's like real wavy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but I probably wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's sort of like you wanted me, but why?
Yeah.
Like, what? Like,
well,
if you want
to be comfortable, it's like that artifice goes on. That is sort of like, it might be great and easy for an actor, but it's not necessarily like, I feel like I'm tugging at myself when
I'm more aware of how I'm moving my face too when I'm wearing, because like I don't wear anything on my face.
Yeah.
So as soon as
you
the foundation, the powders, and they keep like touching it up and adding to you, and like your hair is sprayed to within an inch of its life, I'm suddenly very aware of every movement because I can feel it more.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of like, I'm so much more focused on how I'm holding my face than I am on the words that I'm saying. And like everything I do is still science. Like, even if I'm talent, it's science. And I'm like, guys, this should be secondary to like having a really, really cool script that like gets into the meat. And like, that's why you hired me. So why do I have to wear this much foundation?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's weird. It's
tricky.
Yeah.
It's definitely tricky. Well, where in Canada are you from?
Toronto.
Great.
Yeah.
Toronto's
good city.
Great.
Super multicultural.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I think people don't. Well, there's so much about Canada that I think if you don't spend any time there, there's sort of an across the board assumption about that all of Canada is alike, for one thing, as if, you know, the West Coast, the central area and the East Coast are all just like Canada.
Yeah.
But that's a thing that I think people are surprised about Toronto. Americans are surprised about Toronto. They don't realize that it's like New York in terms of its
it's like
cultural and
smaller scale New York, but nicer.
Yeah, certainly cleaner.
Where people cleaner. I don't know. Last time I was in New York, it was pretty clean, but that was a few years ago at this point. But yeah, like in Toronto, people will talk to you on the subway and it's not weird.
Uh-huh.
So like I still have like social culture shock when I go someplace and people are just like really rude. I'm like, I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah.
And I definitely fall into the classic Canadian trap of like, see somebody across the parking lot and I'm like, I saw them. I'm going to hold the door. I'm like standing there for a full 2 minutes. Like, I'm just going to wait.
Yeah.
I'm good. We're just going to wait.
These are all reasons.
This is what I do.
All reasons I love Canada the first time I went and never feel otherwise because it definitely feels
I went to
I was raised, you know?
Yeah. Where are you from?
I'm from Arizona. But
you're in Arizona?
Yeah. Tucson.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Tucson in a couple of months. I lived in Phoenix for 3.5 years.
Oh, you did? Oh,
yes.
For 3.5 years?
Yeah.
I knew that. What were you doing in Phoenix?
Living?
Just being?
Going
to school or anything?
No, when I finished my master's, I didn't have a PhD lined up. I'd had a job through Arizona State through the NSF. And then because my boyfriend at the time was doing his PhD out there. So I moved to a new country for a boy when I was 24.
Listen, we've all been there. Come on. Many of us.
And then 5 years later, I moved to LA alone. So worked out.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Wow, what did you think of, boy oh boy, it was the Canada weirdest. To Phoenix.
So it was like Toronto, which is so multicultural. It was, and like I'm from the beaches in Toronto, which is very near Little India, and like there's a lot of, I mean, just I love the culture that's represented in that city, and people are nice. Like there's people, you know, crappy people everywhere, but by and large. So then to go to Phoenix, where it was just like, and this was right around the time when that law was passed where you could be stopped and asked for papers if you looked different. And I was just like, the best part about this is that no one would look, I mean, I'm a US citizen, but no one would look twice at me, the non-American born, because I am a pasty That's woman. Right. And I was just, I was so like disturbed by how much not subtle racism was in that city. I'm like, I don't know how to exist here.
Yeah.
And I remember walking down the street, which is a rarity in Phoenix because it's
indeed
hot.
More so even than LA, I think.
And I was in Tempe too, walking. So it wasn't even like cool downtown Phoenix. It was like suburbs of Tempe.
Yeah.
And I saw a woman in a sari, and I realized that it had been 3 years since I've seen like traditional Indian dress, and I was like, that's not okay. I'm not okay with this state. And you know, add to that, it was like not the best relationship and all that. So it was just like not the best place
that
for me to live. So
honestly,
it was,
that's, I really can relate. Like if someone, and I have family in Phoenix, and I feel very differently about Tucson. Not that I would be comfortable moving there, but it's definitely, I mean, there's that sort of rivalry between Tucson and Phoenix, where Phoenix doesn't have an opinion about Tucson, but Tucson loathes Phoenix because of all of the reasons you listed. I mean, that's what I grew up around, was like my going up to visit my grandparents in Phoenix and my dad just railing on it, like, look at this, look at the freeways, this is a mess, look at those lawns, we live in a desert, look at those lawns, like so furious, like where is everyone who's not white, what's going on, like where are all the Hispanic people, because Tucson is just very multicultural
it
in
is,
that way
and it does have a
it
much
protects
more
its
like
environment differently
human and, feeling as opposed to like this kind of human, which that took a lot
tough.
Of getting used
it's
to
tough.
And
I
it
really
was,
feel for you and the yeah the weird. Heat is very depressing.
Also the heat, I was there 4 days before I bought a car.
God.
I mean, Toronto has like not the best public transportation system, but I'd never needed to drive in that city. My parents are on a bus route, and then you get to Phoenix and it's like, well, I'm not gonna wait 40 minutes for the bus in 108 degree heat. No wonder everyone has a car here. It's just, it's not my favorite place.
No, I really 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 I cannot imagine you there at all. That's why I was so aghast. I was like, are we to Phoenix, Arizona?
Yeah, Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah, okay. The shift of those two things. And then from there, I went to Durham, North Carolina, which was different kind of like face smashingly good time.
Wow.
Because we were in the suburbs of Durham, which is already a small town. Like Toronto is a very large city.
Yes.
Durham is not. And it's just I am so bored with this like one bar town. Like, no.
And what
not.
Were you doing in Durham?
The ex-boyfriend had a job. That whole thing. That was before I was like, nope, I'm out. But it was just like, even though that's like Research Triangle and I know people in sort of the Raleigh Durham area, I realized that I'd been there for conferences and it's like a nice spot to visit. But even living there was like a different kind of culture shock. Like every time I moved to a different city in the US, it's like, this is different and I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How do you feel about LA?
It feels.
And how long have you been here now?
I've been here, it'll be 3 years in August.
Okay.
So
that's
I feel
a healthy
more,
amount to have an opinion.
I feel more at home here than I have anywhere else, just because it's more just humans, more like neat things and just like stuff. I don't know. It's like, it just feels more like Toronto to me than anywhere
else
I've lived.
I mean, it's definitely a different experience than being in a city where you're, you know, surrounded by city the way you would be in Toronto.
Yeah.
But I do feel that the difference of like just knowing that the brains that are here, like the creative and like there's so many different kinds of creativity.
There's so much stuff going on here, and it's not limited to like a subset of people. It's sort of like whatever you want to find, you can find here.
I think so too,
and that's what's really really fun about it. And like you know, have a car, will go anywhere in the greater area. Like it's just awesome the stuff you can find out here, which is
Have
so
you been
fun.
Up to San Francisco, because that seems like another place.
So
I
actually work
like
part-time in San Francisco right now, which is exhausting. Once a month to spend between 3 and 5 days up there living in an Airbnb is just like,
what are you doing up there?
Formerly D News, now we're called Seeker. It used to be Discovery Channel's daily online science show. It is its own thing. I don't really know, there's a whole thing about like companies buying companies and whatever. I still have a job.
It's hard to keep track of.
It's hard to keep track
of.
Sure.
Are you doing stuff with Ariel up there? I can't remember.
No, but I mean I know her and we've done stuff together. So she actually emailed me yesterday and said, we're supposed to have lunch next time you're up in San Francisco. It's like, remind me in 3 weeks when I'm there.
Well, does that happen when you travel a lot? For me,
the whole sort of like dealing with what's right in front of me becomes kind of paramount otherwise nothing happens or everything falls to the cracks.
I'm the worst. I'm like increasingly, I hate saying it, but like I desperately need an assistant just to like manage my calendar. Cause I'm actually giving a talk in Rochester this weekend and I feel really bad cause I booked my travel a couple weeks ago. Cause it's exactly right. Like the next thing in my calendar is what I focus on. If you're five items down, I'm not aware of you until you're two items down. Yeah. So these people are hounding me for like my slides and I actually have to go home and do that and all the stuff. And I'm like, oh, sorry. I mean, like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm away on a trip and I have three other things. You're just not my priority yet. And it's just like, yeah, either I can't do it or more often everything just kind of like half falls apart.
Yeah, I really
so
understand.
It's like, it's focusing like week by week. I can't plan out.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Were you busy and traveling a lot elsewhere when you were living in the States? And was that also true in Toronto? Or is this the first time you're really sort of scattered all,
this is
you know,
really,
like seeds in the wind?
Yeah, this is really, I mean, I've always traveled a bit for work, mostly just like for conferences and stuff. So it was like two or three trips a year. Like maybe one weird thing. I had this like insane run of travel where I was in North Carolina. I went up to Toronto to visit family. And then I got called last minute to do an interview for a documentary, which is on Netflix.
Nice.
Aliens on the Moon.
Aliens on the Moon, everybody.
Crazy.
Oh,
you know
shit.
How they can edit you into looking like a weirdo? Go team.
That so is I like so true.
Oh yeah, it was an interesting experience. But they flew me down to LA to do this shoot for 3 days, back up to Toronto to finish the family visit, and then back to LA because I was here for a conference, and then I went to Vegas, and then I went back to North Carolina. It's just like that's like that at the time, like 4 years ago, was a lot of travel. And now It's just like, I would kill for that to be the only travel of the year. Cause like, I think last week I was here all week and it was like, oh my God,
yeah,
I'm here for a week.
Yeah.
I actually did my laundry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of the, I feel worse for my cat of anyone though.
Oh yeah.
Cause he's constantly being left alone.
Yeah. Oh, he is left alone. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I would be with my cat. She had a little automatic feeder and all
I
that kind
leave,
of stuff. Now
like,
I have dogs, so
yeah.
I'm screwed.
Oh yeah, that's hard. Yeah. I couldn't have a dog right now. He's good. He's, you know, not fighting with another cat for food, so I can just leave him a big old bowl and a bunch of water around and he can entertain himself. If it's long enough, I have someone go over and just like, leave them a beer in my fridge. Be like, hey, you wanna come have a drink with my cat while I'm at it down?
God, for me when I was little, that was like I was not at my mom's house as often. My dad had primary custody of me and kind of raised me more. But when I was at my mom's, occasionally her friend Peggy, who lived in a condo like across the way and down a bit, would go out of town and my mom would be in charge of watching her cats. And that to me was like, you know, at, you know, age 10 or 11, the hugest privilege in the world was to go over to someone else's house.
Right.
I wasn't allowed to really have pets.
Yeah.
Except for the two mice I had when I was very little, who my mom ended up taking care of, of course. And then they like contracted terrible diseases she tried to keep them alive as long as she could.
Aww.
Turns out lifespan of a mouse. My mom really pushed the limit on that. Bless her heart.
What is the lifespan of a mouse?
It can't be very long.
No. I can't imagine.
I think it's a couple of years or something. And I feel like my mom was so great with those mice that every time she would take them to the vet and they'd be like, I don't understand how these mice are still alive.
Nice. Get on your mom.
But yeah, go to my mom. But going over to visit the cats and like going into her, this sort of other world, like this is pre-babysitting, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like you don't
have
a lot of opportunities as a young person to go into someone else's house when they're not home.
Yeah.
Her like totally decorated differently, like very dimly lit, like dark, kind of scary, smelled like cigarette smoke house with her two cats was so exotic to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Just what is this place? And like turning on her television and watching whatever I wanted and petting the cats was like, it really felt like such a incredible privilege.
Huh, nice.
My world has expanded a tiny bit since then.
It's amazing what's so exciting when you're 10 years old and you've looked back and you're like, it's weird that was exciting, but I kind of love that kind of stuff was exciting.
And
like,
if you can connect with that old feeling, and even though you can look at it objectively and go, really?
Yeah.
To still be able to feel that little spark inside is like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
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 What would you get excited about when you were when you were around 10, 11? Like, what were the things in Toronto that you were chasing after?
Racking my brain, trying to think of an equivalent, like...
No dank, stinky apartments with cats.
I never babysat. I was not one of those. So I was a competitive gymnast from when I was like 3 17.
Yeah. Holy shit.
So I was training between like, depending on the year, like 8 and 16 hours a week, plus piano lessons and voice lessons and school and stuff. So I never did anything else on the side. I was a gym coach. Like that
How
was
could
my,
you?
Yeah. my job.
Do you have siblings?
No.
Okay.
No,
oh, okay. Me too. Yeah. I'm an only child also.
Yeah.
So, wow. So you really had, and you had a very active schedule.
Yeah, it was structured. It sounds very, like. Very structured. Yes. I am very good at calendars because of my mom. Thankfully, mm-hmm. I inherited that given my.
Yeah.
given
it's
my
almost like
schedule.
You need to be your own assistant. Like if you could have an assistant version of you who just focused on that stuff and then you could focus on what was right in front of you, it would be the perfect
combo. It would be great because I would trust myself to do that. This is my big thing when I think of like, I need an assistant. I'm like, I don't know who I would trust to like answer my emails and manage that stuff because I'd have to train someone up. And I'm like, do I really want to do that? And then I sit back and I'm like, do I need to do that? I'm not that asshole yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I can swear yet.
Okay, oh, no, sorry. I feel like I've I just said holy shit when you said you were a competitive gymnast.
I think I didn't even catch that.
We crossed that border about gymnasm.
I always worry about being like that asshole that's like, no, I'm just a freelance spaceflight historian, but I have an assistant because I'm that big a deal. I'm like, I refuse to be that big. I refuse to do it. I refuse to be that person.
It's very hard. It's very hard. I have a wonderful girl who helps me with stuff sometimes, and I can't even... She has no problem with it, and she's just great and wonderful. And if she weren't so busy, I would say, like, you should. But she's also a huge political activist, and, like, what she does for me is, like, the tiniest, most insignificant thing in her life. But I can't even say my assistant. Like, I have to be like, my friend, you know, my friend who does a couple is helping me out. Like, I just can't get into that mode. And I don't, I really could use an assistant full time if I could afford it.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like there needs to be a different name. Like, I don't know why, like, because I have been someone, when I worked in San Francisco, one of the people I worked for, I was her assistant. Right. I was sort of her office manager, but I was certainly her assistant. I absolutely would, like, pick up her dry clean if need be.
Right.
And I was fine with it on that end, but I remember thinking, like, it's funny to think I'll never, this will never be a job that I will need anyone to do. I was just so sure that I would never have the kind of life that would necessitate that.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of guilt about it. Like the idea of, you know, having someone who just, there's a sort of like, well, you're such a mess that you have to, you know what I mean? It feels
It feels like a different level of failure where you're like, wow, I can't even handle my own life. Therefore, I need someone to handle my life for me. It's like, that's not a bad thing, but it does. Like, I'm completely with you. Like, I just don't feel like I should do that. I don't feel like I would ever be at the place where I need that, even if I am. Because it's like, because the stuff that I need help with is the most mundane stuff where, like, I would feel bad asking someone to do it. Like, I have a Patreon, and when people, like, once every 2 or 3 months, I go through and, like, funding at different levels, you get a little thank you note and a little care package from me. Just the one time. But I do have to sit down and, like, hand write and hand address all of these friggin' envelopes, and I know it means a lot to people and I obviously want to do it, but it's like, I would love to have somebody just sit down and manage that spreadsheet for me and hand write those envelopes for me so I could just write the cards.
Yeah,
we could tag team and it would take half the time. Instead, it's like a full 6 hour evening for me to sit down and hand do it all myself. I'm just like, well, whatever, we're putting on some really crappy chick flicks and cracking out more bourbon and we're just gonna go with it. So it's just like, nope. That's what I consider a night off now. And like, that's really sad.
Yeah.
So,
I predict that you will, like me, it will happen in small phases and you will end up just sort of thinking of it the way I do, which is this is helping someone else. There's nothing about her that to me says this is all you're good at. It's like she needs money. What she's doing is really important work, but it doesn't really pay a lot. And if there's dumb stuff I need that is kind of like doesn't require a ton of brain energy, then that's even more brain energy she can put into that, and I can put a little money in her pocket. And that's how she sees it, and that's how I see it, and like that's how I can be peaceful about it. And it's not an everyday thing, it's like when she has time. But
so she's not your I'm honestly, my mind immediately goes to taxes, like, so is she your employee that you
not at all.
This is just like I'm gonna totally, give you like private money.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I know.
A little here and there is just like you needed a little help. You don't have to think of it as
Because I've honestly considered like friends that I know that could use a little bit of extra money. Yeah. I'm like, I feel like I could almost hire you to like deal with some of my emails because you know enough about science.
Totally.
Maybe I'll look into that.
You might want to dip the toe. I think it will get to a point where there is that sort of tipping point where you're like, I officially am now willing to spend a little time showing someone something.
Yeah.
For the return of the future, just know, opposed to like the same thing I do, which is it's going to take more time to explain this than it is to do it. Like at some point, I think you'll hit a point where
it's gotten
suddenly
a point
that's
where,
not
like,
a choice anymore.
I don't do social media anymore because I just don't have time. Because it like think like going on Facebook and answering all those messages, like I actually really need to go turn that feature off because I'm sure there are thousands. Yeah. And I just like, it gives me anxiety to think about how many unanswered emails I have because I can't get to everybody. I try to get to the people that are like asking really good questions or need help with something, but like, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Because like, I have to do the work that pays the bills and like gets me the career that people want to email me about, you know?
Yeah. It's just like, it's hard. It really is. It's really hard.
It's weird. So
it's
like the best problem to have ever, but it's like the most anxiety inducing
problem. Person and you feel that responsibility, it can be very anxiety inducing. I completely agree. When you were doing all of this stuff as a younger person, especially like you said, all the way through up through age 17. How much of that was that all you driven? Like, was it like you really knew you were passionate about it, or were your parents sort of like, here's this thing you seem to have taken a liking to? We're going to kind of go whole hog on
this. I think there's like a little from column A, a little from column B, like what happens with most parents with one child. My older cousin was a gymnast and I wanted to be like her.
Yeah.
So I went to that club and, you know, we tried different places that were closer to me, but ended up at one that was like, I didn't realize when I was 6 years old how far away from my parents as it was, but I was there for like 12 years. It was like, that was just a thing that I did. And I was, I started doing the voice and the piano because I was in a car accident when I was 7 and I broke my spine. Oh, and there was questions of like, will you walk? Oh, you will. Oh, you might not be able to do sports. Mm. So I had a bit of an aptitude for singing and for music. So my parents put me in voice and piano to like foster something that wasn't active just in case. But then, of course, like 7-year-olds bones are like bamboo. They like bounce back, right? Which is awesome for me. So I was able to actually do all of them. So I gradually like gave up singing for a while and then picked it up again when I did fewer hours in gymnastics, when I was like trying to get my grades up to get into a good university to have a job. And it's just like, yeah, in retrospect, it's like I did a lot of things as a teenager. I don't know if that's normal or not, but it's just like a lot of driving across the city to all these different extracurriculars and like trying to do all the things.
What was your group of friends like when you were a teenager then? Did you have like people from all of those walks of life that you were sort of connecting with on different levels?
I had like my closest friends or my gym friends because I'd known them since I was 3 or 4. Like we grew up together.
Did that mean you compete against each other too?
Well, no, because I was never as good.
That's easy. It was, that right away.
So, you know, there were a few times that we were in the same group, but like no one really cared. Like we all knew where our levels were, and it was like, if I
and
like,
you weren't
nailed
like this
a skill,
is the only thing that matters
no,
to me.
No, we were never that kid. And like I was also so injured because of like my car accident and other
things.
What
was that recuperation like?
I mean, I was honestly so young that I don't totally remember the details of
maybe
it.
That's for the
which
best.
Is like probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I do actually have very vivid memories of the accident itself. We won't go into that. But yeah, I was in like a body cast for months, like a Velcro. It was like they called me Terminator because it was like this Velcro thing that I had to wear under my clothes.
Yep, that's
and,
what
like,
the Terminator wore.
Yep, apparently the Terminator was made of Velcro, little known fact. I was like, you know, I had to sort of relearn a lot of things. So I was always behind my friends. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like, once you have a traumatic injury like that, when you're a kid, you know how breakable you are. So like I had huge fear issues with like hurling my body full tilt over a piece of wood and calling it fun.
I can't believe you went back to it. I think that's impressive in and of itself.
Yeah. And it was just like every time, like I've actually had 4 major surgeries because of that accident before I was 12. So like that kept pushing me back. Wow. So it was never a matter of like competing against my friends so much as like we were just friends and we were just like proud of each other for doing things. And like that's why I always like gymnastics as a sport, even though it's terrifying when you think about what you're doing, because you're never competing against anyone else. It's individual, which like I like because you're it doesn't really matter like if that girl beats you, fine, but you did better for yourself. And that's
your
really
own
matters.
Timekeeping and your own sort of point
that's
system.
What I always liked about it, because I'm not good at being competitive.
Yeah, me neither. I'm having PTSD about your accident. Really interesting though. I think that's there's really something to that, because I would imagine that would curb that kind of reckless immortality feeling that teenagers have when nothing is happening. Like I definitely hadn't really had much happen to me.
Right.
And I think only recently has this sort of anxiety set in that's yeah. like, oh my God, I'm so fragile. Anything could kill me. Like I could step on something and die. I could, you know, like all yeah. of these things could kill me.
I am definitely that person. If I get into a car with someone and they don't put on a seatbelt, I'm like, could you put your seatbelt on for yeah. me? And I'm like, they're like, what? I don't always wear a seatbelt if I'm driving. And I'm like, okay, first of all, that's dumb. But second yeah. of all, like I know how much you're going to break.
Yeah.
Because I
yeah.
was broken in, like I was wearing a seatbelt, but yeah. you know, in 92, there was a lap belt. Oh. So that, you know, that's why when your body goes forward and then goes back, that's what breaks all the things.
Yeah.
So I'm always just like, I'm that person that's like the yeah. mom being like, I'm sorry, can you please put on your seatbelt? Because yeah. you're making me really anxious.
Oh my God, and,
like,
of course.
I get really anxious when I see like Uber drivers looking at their phone, not just for maps. Mm-hmm. And like, nope, like I look at maps in the car because I have no sense of direction still in the city. But it's just like, don't start texting. Don't start emailing. Like, don't be a dick about yeah. driving me. Like, you have not been in an accident. You don't know how breakable you are. Yeah. And like, you don't bounce back when you're in your 30s like you do when you're tiny.
Hell
so
yeah.
yeah.
Oh boy.
It's definitely like, I'm very aware that I've been more cautious about some things, just like trying not to break myself.
Yeah, no kidding. Your friends, as you kind of went through that, especially the ones that you had known through that yeah. time, was that a situation where they were around, or did you kind of like, as happens to some people, like sort of disappear into recovery and then kind of reemerge? You know what I mean?
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I was really young.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. No, fair enough.
I feel like I wanted to see friends. I think the worst was like, I was out of school for a couple of weeks. And like when you're seven, you're what, grade one, grade two? I think it was grade one. And I was just like, I had to do all the homework that I'd missed. And I was just like, this is the worst thing ever. Like, that's my strongest memory, is having this like stack of worksheets.
For that age, I can sure understand that.
And like that age, I'm just like, I just went through this.
Don't I get a pass on this?
I know. You're just like,
you just like take the average of the stuff I did do?
Exactly.
Were you a good student?
No. No. This is what.
That's a surprising answer,
right? This is what, I mean, I always like did my work, but yes, whenever people are like, oh my God, you're so smart, you must have been like a straight A student. I was like, no, I was nature's B student all the way down.
Yeah.
Like even through grad school, like I was B's. Like I was not good at stuff because I don't learn, because like, I don't know. I don't know about the education system in America, aside from the fact that it's broken. Mm-hmm. I went to a private school, so I don't even know about the public education system in Canada. Yeah. But I feel like there's like not everyone learns the same way.
Sure.
And I first learned this when I was taking ancient Greek in undergrad, that like I have been doing languages since I was little. I was raised bilingual in French, so languages are easier for me than someone who's never done another language.
Yeah.
And being in this class and watching the teacher get annoyed with students who didn't understand how to do the translations, I was like, but that's because they learn a different way. So you need to take the time as a teacher to actually do that. And that's when I realized like, oh yeah, all the B's and C's that I got in school was not because I'm dumb. It's because teachers expect this to work for everyone and it yeah. doesn't, which is why like I always half joke that I've done more work since grad school in my own career than I ever did in like all of my academic life, because yeah. I can learn on my terms and do it the way that works for me now.
So yeah.
like I was never a bad student, but I was like not gonna win any academic awards.
Right,
like
right.
I won a math award in high school. I was the smartest of all the dumb kids. I'm really proud of that one.
And that's exactly what the award said.
Yeah, no, No, we had four levels of math at my high school, and I had the best grade of the lowest level of math. I was the smartest of the dumb
kids. That's an amazing award.
Yeah,
what an amazing award.
So yeah, that's that was my claim to fame, and everyone was like, "See, you are smart." I'm like, "Yeah, but I'm not."
Right.
Like, look at who you're comparing me
right,
to.
Right.
All the dunces put in
bless.
A room, taught how to do addition in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
yeah, what's funny to me and interesting to me too is, like I was a good student in the sense, like there were definitely things that I skated by on, but I skated by with an A for whatever reason, probably because my education, I don't know if maybe it wasn't, I mean, if I'd been to private school, I'm sure I would have been caught
yeah.
in kind of being a lazy student. But it's always interesting to me when, like, because I was, and then through college I was, but I never, like, I didn't have the drive to go to grad school. So I'm always interested in, like, this idea of sort of,
yeah.
you know, you had, like, what was, because you were motivated to move
right.
forward.
Because this is what, I have this conversation with people a lot. They're like, no, I need to get the degree to get the job I want. I'm like, but do you? Because, like, I don't have a PhD.
Yeah.
Like, from my like, short version of my story is, like, I was the smartest of the dumb kids in math, right? I was not even allowed to take physics in high school. So I was given no chance chance to do science. Like, my guidance counselor told me that I wasn't smart.
Yeah.
So I should be an artist. Because, oh, like, the
what
actual...
are these guidance counselors,
I don't know.
Doing?
I gave, like, an informal talk to some college kids the other night, just, like, talking to them about untraditional careers and, yeah, you know, weird careers in science. And I was, like, telling them my story, and I was like, this actually sounds really demoralizing. Like, I'm so sorry. I felt so bad telling all these kids, like, even your parents might not be proud of you. Like, it's so terrifying.
Oh,
but,
boy.
So yeah, like I won the dumb kid math award, but I also won art awards. So everyone was like, yeah, you're completely an artist. Like, go, you know, be creative. So, but like in my high school, because I went to a snooty private school, they're like, well, no, you go to college.
Right.
So my cousin, the brother of the cousin who was the gymnast, he went to the school in Nova Scotia, King's College, that had this great books program that sounded kind of awesome. And he raved about it. And I was like, well, maybe I'll go there. And I got in and it was great. And that was the school where they offer history of science and technology as an undergraduate
nice.
Degree. And I was like, oh my God, so I can do science without having to be in science.
Yeah.
And this was like the turning
That's
point.
That's a mind blower right there.
I had no idea yeah. this was a thing. Because I knew that like you could do history, but then you have to like be an academic. So like I still, like in college, I didn't really know what to do with it. So I did the major. I did history of science and classics because the classics department was just really good at Dalhousie. So yeah, my party trick of ancient Greek is a real thing. but then I also had the, you know, what do you do next? Well, everyone in this like highly academic environment coming from parents, my dad's a doctor, my mom's an artist, you know, oh, you go to school, you get more education.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really know what to do. And like my advisors were like, well, you're not really smart enough to be a professor, so so maybe don't go to grad school. And I was encouraged to go into public relations because that's creative and fun. So I actually did a degree in corporate communications and public relations, and I describe it as an eye gougingly good time because it was the worst. Oh my God. So the thing that I learned that year was that people in PR, I mean, some people just love like creating those kinds of like your face is great right now.
Yeah.
But you know, some people
love
creating like, you know, an event or whatever it is. And like, that's fun. But for the most part, I learned that PR is the job where you're paid to love what someone is paying you to love. And I realized that I have this thing that I love. Like, I've always been fascinated by the Apollo program and the moon landing and space flight. And I was like, I'm not giving that up. So halfway through that year, I was like, fuck it. And I applied to grad school and I got in and I did my master's. And halfway through that, I was like, fuck this. I hate this too. And I just like hated everything and everyone. Like, yeah. I was actually on the admissions board for the PhDs and incoming MAs at my university. And I was in the meeting when they decided not to give me entrance to the PhD program. I was like, come on, you guys. Like, I know I'm not the best student in the world because like you, I hated everything. I was just like, none of this is interesting to
right.
me. None of my advisors liked space. So I was like trying to find that medium. And I was like, you know what I don't want to do? Satisfy someone else's requirements and pretend that I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, I'm not going to spend 5 years writing a massive body of work for 5 people to not read.
Yeah.
Because they didn't even read my full master's thesis. Mm. I was the only one that got in on time and I got a B on it because it wasn't academically written enough. Now I have a book out with a major publisher. Like, so I was just like,
boom, guys.
Fuck it.
And Thanks a lot.
I always say that I like unceremoniously turned my back on academia and I was like, I'm just going to go find a way to make this work.
Good
and it was
you.
Like the weirdest path to like blogging, and I was a personal trainer on the side, and then like,
yeah, you really,
doing,
I mean, you really have the sort of like,
so many weird
yeah,
things.
This, but the, you know, yeah. the athleticism mm-hmm. and the sort, and you know, the arts.
Yeah.
And so what were you doing as an artist? Were you doing fine art? Like, were you doing painting? Were you doing illustrating?
I was painting, and like, I have no idea what a future in that would have looked like. I mean, I wanted to go to art school. My parents always said that I would have to get a degree and then I could go and get like a master's of fine arts, which is what my mom did. She has a degree in zoology and then an MFA. They're like, you know, you could do that. And I was like, okay, so that was like what I thought I was going to do because I had no idea. Like, the job that I have is not a job that exists, right? Like, I basically made a career for myself as a professional space history nerd. So, like, I would never have imagined that I could be here,
yeah.
let alone, like, where it's going to go next, which is, like, what gives me a lot of anxiety.
Understood.
It's just,
understood.
Like, when you realize, like, oh, my God, I just had a meeting about a TV show. I don't know if I can handle this right now. And
yeah.
it's just like, ah. So, yeah, it's just, like, it's weird to sort of tell people about that as like how you got here. It's like, because I don't really know what it is that drives
yeah you can't
you
say
like
here's my pamphlet of A through
yeah.
Z, which will, if you follow this perfectly, you will end up in the same
like,
place I am. There's it's an
yeah.
impossibility.
because they, I mean, you say like what drives you to like keep going and pursue other degrees. It's like, because I didn't know what else to do,
yeah.
but I knew that I wanted to do something that I didn't hate. So it was just like having fun was the driver, and like, and still like having fun, like my work is awesome. I was researching Saturn V concepts this morning and like weird sea-based rockets and stuff. I'm just like, this is so fun. I'm That's so great. Excited to tell the world about it and have the internet call me a cunt a million times.
Do you have YouTube. People who
oh,
are
oh yeah
why
oh yeah because you're a woman on the internet who's successful, you're not allowed. God, so like, you know,
for ginormous the, bummer yeah. I can't for the most I just part, use those words
for the am most I? Part it's you know, it's great, but there's definitely those days where it's just like I don't have that strength in me right now to do this, and you're just like, this is not I don't know I don't, how to do that, it
oh boy.
But it's rough, it's definitely weird, it's definitely different. Yeah.
God, I just can't. I mean, of course, I'm not surprised. Like on a granular level, I'm not surprised because, of course, I know.
Yeah.
But like on a human being level, yeah. I will never not be surprised by that. Do you know what I mean? I never want to stop being surprised by it because if on some ethical level, I'm just like, yeah, humans are shit. Then what am I doing? I might as well kill myself. But like, so I want to continue to be like surprised and disappointed.
Yeah.
Even though I know that's just a kind of a component of being alive in this age.
I know. And it's awful. Like, I mean, I'm sure you know, like some days you wake up and you see like if the first 10 comments on YouTube are just like really hateful. And like, for the most part, it's like they don't have anything thoughtful to say. It's just like the biggest thing that I get is something along the lines of, who is this bitch with her fucked up hair? Why is she in my recommendations? And sorry, that's a lot of beeping to put in.
No,
it's just like, it's one of those things where I'm just like, if that's the first like 10, 15 comments you get in the morning, it's just like, I don't want to get out of bed anymore. It's just like, it's demoralizing. And also to know that like, because I had to, when I was telling you, I gave this talk to some college kids just to like have an informal talk about, you know, pursue weird things. Don't turn down things that look strange, but feel right.
Yeah.
Oh, what was I going to say about that? Oh, yeah, that, like, it's not even just, like, internet trolls. It's, like, academic historians. Like, I don't interact with the people in my field because they don't like that I do stuff that's publicly accessible. They want to keep it, like, within the boys
club. That's very interesting. I feel like I hear a lot. I started hearing about that, even just, like, I don't even remember.
Oh, good. It's not just me. Because, like, this is something I've been really struggling with recently. Because, like, people don't like me. I'm on a panel at a conference in a couple of months, and I won't give out the details just because in case anyone listens to this. But there's been an email chain going around about, like, space, all about space history, and everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, I guess I'll talk about long form media and old journalism and like the value of good reporting. And then I'm sort of sitting there like, I guess I'm the big bad new media now, even though like I also write books and I also research primary material. Yeah. It's like, no one, it's that weird thing where like, if you do stuff on the internet, people will tear you down because they can. But then also the people that should be your peers don't take you seriously because you're on the internet. So it's like that weird mid-range where it's like,
all right, but first of all, I don't know what your feelings are on him. So for all I know, I could be lumping you in with someone that you feel disdain for. But I feel like the person that popped into my mind when you said all this was Carl Sagan, because scientists felt like, do your own research and stop talking to the public about it, asshole.
Yeah.
And like, and then people, and then, you know, intellectuals that were just like, you're not a real writer, you're a scientist, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, you should have your own show. So to me, that's somebody that like advanced human understanding and appreciation of science in such a profound way.
Yeah.
And yet was hated by some of his colleagues because he was reporting on other people's, you know, discoveries or research. And there was this very cloistered sort of like, what you're saying belongs in here. What are you doing?
Yeah, and there's very much
he's a legend. He's not, I'm not saying he's perfect, but I think he very much falls into the category of like, he was ahead of his time.
I think he probably did more for science and for education than anyone else in his generation by virtue of the fact that like getting people excited and sharing. And what I love about his cosmos, even though if you watch it now.
Thank God you agree with me, because that is how I feel. Because I do feel, I see that in you. Do you know what I'm saying? I see that in you of people being like, you know, why are you doing it this way? And like, I don't know, I don't like your point of view and sort of, you know, and meanwhile, other people are going, thank God this person's around making things accessible.
It's, I mean,
what were you going to say, even if you watch Cosmos now?
you watch Sagan's Cosmos, even though like now it's very slow moving and like kind of hard, but you know, the MTV generation needs things way faster.
Right.
You get a sense of his like quiet awe of everything that he's talking about. And that is so rare, where like you can hire a, just to go back to like, you know, hiring talent, like you can have an actress like reading the script or whatever, but she's not going to have that same like personal feeling behind it. So like I think it's super important to have those people that can take the stuff, that can do the research, that actually understand it to tell people about it.
Yeah.
Because that like that's ultimately what's going to get kids excited.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
Like how many kids are going to read an academic paper and be like, oh, I want to be a staunch academic, mom and dad? They're going to be like, no.
Yeah,
that makes me really interested in rockets or in deep space biology.
Sure.
And now I'm curious, and I'm going to keep finding that spark. And it's like, if I
and by the way, there's nothing, there's no, yeah, you no one says you can't go back and read those academic papers once your enthusiasm is there.
Yeah,
but it shouldn't be,
but you need
to be
spark.
Born out of that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, and that's what's always so hard, like from me personally, is like people are like, oh, you just like regurgitate what you read. I'm like, but so do you. You just do it in an academic journal based on the exact same report that was just declassified that I also read.
Right.
Like just because I put it in a different forum doesn't mean that I'm not doing the work.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it's just like so frustrating that from all sides you have people being like, you're not real. It's like, oh, last I checked and poked myself in the arm, I totally am.
I know. God. Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that you're forging past that, because I think that's a phase, and I think that phase will end. Like, I
think
what you're going through now is a phase. I just don't think that it's going to, I think that there are people in all mediums who are sort of caught up in that right now. And that's, unfortunately, that's a growing pain that like people like you that are on the front lines are really experiencing in a super intense way that shouldn't be necessary.
Yeah.
But I think we'll push past that. And I think it feels like we're on the precipice of sort of, because even just in my, the sort of acting side of what I do, there's like so much confusion around new media. There's so much confusion around all of that. It's dumb to say this because it feels like fear is about bigger things than this. But I think that there's little fear and there's big fear.
Yeah.
And it's still fear-based. Mm-hmm. It's still fear-based. There's still a sense of like, am I as an academic who doesn't approve of what you're doing, am I going to become obsolete?
Because I think that's exactly what it is, at least from my perspective. It's people that are like, well, if you're getting, and I think the reason they don't like me is because, you know, they see my face and my name attached to the work that everybody's doing. It's like, so I don't like you because you're getting more recognition than I do and I feel like I deserve it. So I'm going to hate you because I want to be known for it. It's like, or we could all work together.
Yeah.
Or we could just like, you know, we could share stuff and like I have the platform to be on camera telling people about it, and I can throw to your papers. I can tell people all about your work. Like I do that. I'm talking about a paper, you know, when I find a good paper, I'm just like, yeah, these two people said this and this is awesome. And like, here's the link if you want to go look at it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why are we not just doing this together?
Yeah,
why are we not sharing? I'm not being like, I did all this research, therefore I am amazing. It's like, no, I researched the paper that's about someone else's research.
Do you know Kara Santa Maria?
Yes.
Does she go through this kind of stuff too?
I don't know her
I'm
well
sure
enough.
She does.
Yeah. I imagine so, but like, I don't. I mean,
I'm sure Ariel does. I'm sure you do. Like, I'm sure.
I've met her like three times.
Though. Yeah. I'm just sure that, I mean, I didn't talk with this about her. I worked with her at the Huffington Post, and I don't.
Right.
We probably even talked about it back then. I probably was like, you must just have like, so you also have people who are completely obsessed with you for the wrong reasons, and you must have people who just think you're the biggest asshole.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I said that, and I'm sure she was like, "Oh yeah, you know."
Oh, yeah.
It's a tough situation to be in.
The happiest emails that I get. I got an email actually yesterday from a guy who, he's got two daughters, one in high school, one in like early college, and he'd sent them both my video about like, here's my story where I did like a 25-minute like story time with Amy and like went through my academic career and like why I just left it and did my own thing, and he told me that his older daughter was so interested in that. She went back and looked through all my old videos to see the progression of like my first YouTube videos and like see just how much I've evolved that and just persevered throughout it. And she was like, her dad told him that she was just like really impressed and inspired to sort of pursue something in spite of how hard it is. And I was like, that's the best thing in the world. Like that makes
me
weak.
That needs to be worth
like
10,000 negative comments. And the problem, of course, is that we are such sensitive beings as a species that it ends up being somehow the opposite, unless you like really exercise the muscle of letting that be, as you know, more important, because otherwise this sort of like nagging feeling is like, no, in fact, it's the other way around. And one negative thing is worth 10,000 positive things. And
there's,
like,
that
that's just bullshit.
There's that oatmeal comic that I love that's like, how I feel after reading 1,000 positive comments about my work. And he's smiling. And then how I feel after reading 1,000 positive comments and one negative comment. I'm going to go hang myself.
Seriously?
And it's absolutely true.
Seriously.
It's like that one thing. Like, it really does get to you. And people know that it gets to you.
Yeah.
And that's why they hide behind avatars and they hide behind fake names. And they don't, you know, when you don't have something thoughtfully negative to say, like, if I make a mistake, please tell me and I will fix it, because I don't have a fact checking system. I am a one woman operation,
right,
like, that's fine. But if all you can say about me is that you don't like my eyebrows, like, I think this is just getting stupid at this point.
And, like, first of all, everyone, we have all of this stimulation. By the way, I have to get into this MASH game soon. I can't believe how little I talked to you about your teenage years, but I think we got a picture.
All right.
It is, you know, We have all the stimuli. We are encouraged to form opinions. Certainly, we're told what our opinion should be. But, you know, we're a very opinion-oriented society. And people are going to have opinions. And, you know, just because I'm on TV sometimes doesn't mean that I don't watch someone else on TV and actually think to myself, like, I don't love her eyebrows. Like, I wish she didn't have those eyebrows. Or, you know, I don't like her delivery. Or I don't know why they cast that guy, because I don't think... But, like... The difference is I'm not going to go tell anyone any of that. I don't need to. I can have that opinion.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. It just doesn't mean anything. I don't need that person to know.
Exactly. The way that I describe...
What is going on with these people that they're like, I need her to know I hate her. It's important to me.
I think the most incredible example of this I found was somebody emailed me from their work email address. So I know what lab he works in, at what hospital. Actually, he works at the hospital I was born in Toronto. He emailed me just to critique my lipstick. Actually went through all the work to go to my website to find my email, to send a contact form through my website, just to tell me that my lipstick is whorish. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I know who you are. I just found your academic CV. Yeah. It's just like, this is nuts. But I always describe to people that the YouTube comments is like, remember back in the day watching the Miss America pageant with your like sort of old, maybe a little bit racist grandmother, just yelling obscenities about girls prancing around in bikinis. It's like that. Only she's yelling it at the girls and they can hear her.
Yeah.
Right. That's like, that's kind of what it feels like. Cause I remember Miss America. It was just like, no, they're too pretty. Let's obviously just like be mean to them. But obviously they know they're brilliant and they can't hear us. Like,
well,
it's such a weird thing. So
the last thing I'm going to say about this, and this, I really feel like this has turned into like a media bitch fest.
Oh, but and then I can just tell you about how awkward I was when I was a teenager.
and then you were awkward as a teenager.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. When I was at HuffPost, we actually were, we part of the thing that it was people could live comment. So I would literally be live on the air and read, that blonde doesn't know what she's talking about. Like, we had someone who was supposedly screening that stuff. So God knows what was being said that I wasn't seeing.
Yeah.
But when stuff like that would slip through, it's like I was live talking about something and I would see that come through. And that was my job.
That's insane. Yeah, because we have people that like manage comments at DNews turned Seeker that like they go through the comments as they come in for like specific words. And every time, you know, depending on the episode, like I did an episode once about premenstrual breast tenderness, which was literally like my brain was like, why can I not sleep and why do my boobs hurt? And I was like, I'm going to research this. Turns out it's very interesting hormones. It's a very common thing and it's very science. So we did an episode on it. And apparently like the guy who was in charge of it at the time just had to sit there for like 4 days just removing comments that were just horrifyingly derogatory. It's just like, why? Like the one time I did an episode on my channel about menstruation in space, which is like an interesting historical thing, and like people don't know much about it, and all the comments that I have to sift through from people being like, this is disgusting, don't you know that we don't want it? It's like, how are you like a grown man, like theoretically married, like how, like I don't understand a man who has ever lived with a woman who is grossed out by like natural things. And it's just like, just having to sift through all that yourself is just like, oh my god. So and it's of course, the bigger you are, the worse it gets, because you're more of a target. So I definitely hit that when I hit about, I don't know, 50,000 subscribers on YouTube a year ago. It's just like, that's when it started to get real bad. And it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Those are subscribers.
I know.
That should elicit people who, you know.
But they can't tell. I don't think there's within YouTube's algorithm, I don't know if you can tell who's commenting if they're a subscriber or not. I think people will see a channel that's big and just hate on it because it's big. Do you know what I mean?
It makes as much sense and little sense as anything else that we talked about.
Media bitch fest.
All right, listen, I'm going to get into this MASH game.
All right. So me in high school, I was just a weird, awkward nerd with like,
But you did have a lot going on.
I had a lot going on, but I was that kid that like, so when I was
really...
Did you
feel, were you connected, I guess that's the question, is were you connected with your sexuality in a positive way, or was that something that was yet to come?
I don't know. I was like... I could not get a boyfriend. I still can't get a boyfriend. But
even though you're willing to follow, we'll follow. Guys, that phase is over. She's not going to follow you.
High school was weird. I was probably about 20 pounds heavier than I am now because I was doing a lot of gymnastics and then I hit puberty and like became.
I was going to ask about that. The womanly gymnastics, body. Because gymnastics and ballet both are like.
Two of those things where like you develop very muscularly because you're building all that muscle growing up. And then all of a sudden, like in one summer, I went from like an A cup to a C cup, not from implants, which is what people are always like, overnight. Yeah. It's like, no, like literally I just like hit puberty overnight. Sure. And then all of a sudden I was like, now. So now, yeah, I always had like, but then I went fewer hours in gymnastics, but didn't know that that meant that I should probably not be eating as much as I was. So I was like a little bit chunkier, which just meant that like everything was bigger. And I just like all my friends, I never got along with the girls at my high school because they were always like fake IDs and going out to like date college boys. And I was like, I don't care about any of that. Like I've never had a fake ID. In Canada, you drink at 19. So it's not as big a deal.
Yeah.
So like my friends were the weird, awkward guys and like it was the guys and me. And then like I didn't have a boyfriend till last year of high school. So I just like felt
even
kind
though I'm
of
sure some of those guys were like, only your boyfriend.
Yeah, a little bit. It got weird, but they were all basically just too awkward and nice.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was just like I had good friends, but I didn't have like, I don't know, I was sort of just like I've always been a bit of like a lone wolf type. Yeah. I don't know, maybe it's an only child thing where I'm just kind of used to being alone, but I don't know. So high school teenage Amy was just awkward and like did a lot of things. And so I went to a really small high school. There were 57 in my grad class. So they said something individual about each of us when we got our diplomas. And my guidance counselor's comment on me was, Amy is the girl that nobody hates. I was like, that's kind of weird.
I really want to smack this person.
Yeah, she was not the most encouraging.
That is a shocking
at all.
Statement.
Yeah, I know there were so many, like, I know I wasn't the best student ever, but like, I just can't believe how much discouragement came out of that school.
I cannot believe it either. I can't believe that's the best she could come up
and
with. It's like negging you. It's
I
like
know,
she's playing
I know.
The game. Like,
you know
that
what
dress makes you
negging.
Look pretty. Like, wait a minute. Hold on. Let's break that statement down.
Yeah, it was odd. So it's just sort of like, I just kind of hated it. And just like didn't really engage and just like wanted to just not be there anymore. And
now, side note, this was you in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And then did you go to school?
I went to college in Nova Scotia for 5 years.
Now, is that, I feel like King's College is mentioned in Anne of Green Gables. Listen, that was my entirety of my experience with Canada and why I was sure I loved it, because I was a child that went through and read all the books numerous times.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that King's College is a factor.
I can't remember. It might be because King's College was founded in 1729, I want to say, and then moved to Halifax. It was originally somewhere else. It burned down, and then Dalhousie University helped us rebuild in like the 1850s, I want to say. So PEI is in, or Anne of Green Gables is in Prince Edward Island. Which
but Halifax,
far from Nova Scotia.
Halifax and Nova Scotia play a significant role as her world kind of.
Yeah,
wins.
I don't remember. I don't remember the details of all those books actually, but it's quite possible. So I was there for 5 years, and then I did my PR degree and my master's back in Toronto, and then moved to Phoenix. So
Phoenix.
It's been
period,
weird.
End
There's
of
been
sentence.
A lot of weird things. So.
God, that's Well, listen, no one can accuse you of not having been around in the United States because you've really seen some off the beaten path places. Okay. All right. So for my first MASH category, let's go ahead and do three. Let's do three kind of mysteries, either in your realm of expertise or just in general, that you would like to see, like you would like to know the answer to.
Ooh.
Three. I'm going big with you on some
of these. Apparently
big high concept.
I thought it was
also
supposed to be like jobs and
boy
names.
Some of that comes in, but this is improvisation, so it's okay if an hour from now you're like, I really wish I would have said blah 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 instead.
First mystery, is there life on Titan?
Great.
This is all going to be life in the solar system.
That's great.
Oh, okay. No, I have my three. Okay. Second one is there life on Europa? And third is, are Triton and Pluto sister bodies? I want a Neptune mission so badly.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that was, Titan and Europa were, especially Europa, were like so huge in 2010.
Yeah.
The book, that Arthur C. Clarke book. And that was a 2001. I was like, I love this. When I was a kid, I hadn't seen the movie or anything. Yeah. I just had read the books. And to 2000. And so when 2000, like when it became clear to me that 2001 was a big deal in part because of Stanley Kubrick's movie, I was like, I don't get it, because I loved the book 2010 so much more.
I never
more.
Read that one. Yeah.
You might enjoy it, because it goes real deep into, like, it really goes deep into Europa, for example.
Yeah.
So I especially love these mysteries that you want to solve. Okay. And then next one is a place where you'd have a vacation home, but it could be within this planet, or it could be something that is irrational on some level, i.e. it could be a Hobbiton, it could be Star Wars, it could also just be undersea, you know, but something that is unrealistic, or if you want it to be Tokyo, that's also fine. Three.
Right. Paris.
Great.
I want to say, like, a private island somewhere around Fiji or something.
Great, great.
I don't know. I can't. There's nothing like otherworldly that's popping out.
Totally fine.
I don't know. Where's somewhere else that'd be cool? I don't know. I'm really bad at this, apparently.
No. This is a common response. By the way, I feel like even when sometimes people turn the tables on me, if I do their podcast, and I am the worst. Like, I have no answers prepared. Yeah. I mean, you know, even though I do the game and I'm like, should be prepared for some of the questions. How do you feel about, like,
the moon?
You
say, we'll do the third one on the moon, just so I can watch the Earth rise.
There
but then
go.
It'd be really cold for 2 weeks. It'd be like the two-week on, two-week-off vacation home.
Yeah. Well, you can teleport there, so you can just be there will, and you don't have to worry about the weather.
Yeah.
Let's do, now I said teleportation, that can be one, but let's do three modes of transportation that aren't doable or real. It could be something that hypothetically is real, or it could be something that, like, will probably never exist.
I mean, I guess hover car, but I don't really even see the point of hover cars, because, like, when everyone has hover cars and we're all hover carring around,
and it's just,
like,
traffic jams in the air.
It's just traffic jams in the air. Like, we're going to have hover car rules. Like, every time I think of these, like, alternate modes of transportation, I'm just like,
it'd be good if only I had them.
But if everyone had them,
then we'll do that. This is something only you have.
Okay.
A hover car. With the understanding that no one else has a hover car.
Right. Yeah. I might want, like, a private jetpack for, like, short commutes.
Great.
And I would really like a private supersonic jet.
Great.
For, like, long, like, cross country.
Hell
just like, you know, pop up fringes of space and, like, get to Australia in 4 hours as opposed to 14, because, like, that flight sucks.
Yeah,
I was in Australia for a month last year, and every time I was, like, giving a talk and I was talking about Dinosaur, which is an old Air Force space plane concept, and one of the spinoffs that one of the, like, lead engineers thought of was what he called ultraplanes, which are, like, rocket powered supersonic gliders that would be able to just for passenger travel.
Yeah.
And one of the examples he gives is going from London to Sydney in 3 hours. Uh-huh. And I'd be in this room and, like, in Sydney and be like, and can you imagine being able to get to London 3 hours? Everyone was like, oh my god,
the London, because all we have it bad, but the London to Sydney,
how, I don't know how far that is, how it's, many hours being, is that, it, because it's like, I feel like you go through 22? Singapore or something.
Yeah, it's outrageous. Yeah, because it's, I definitely was, a couple of the cons I did, there were people who were English also appearing at that con, and I was like, I was complaining that I was, you know, jet lagged or whatever, although it's never that bad. It's always bad coming back.
Yeah.
But I definitely was like, oh, you know, it was, there was some reason about the time difference. And they just looked at me like I was the biggest asshole. And I was like, what? It takes like 14 hours to get here. And they're like, 24. And I was like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Different.
London to Sydney is, I've only heard, is like the worst possible
bad news.
Travel. So.
In fact, there was one guy that I met who actually had what you call it with your deep vein thrombosis.
Yeah.
He had one of those happen to him on one of those flights.
Oh my
because
God.
He was just sitting still for so long.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a nightmare thing. You kind of hope isn't that common or real, because you get warned about it and you think, like, well,
and
that's terrible.
Most people should know to just stand up, just move around, just like, but it's, and I've become that person where I'm sort of like, maybe premium economy for this cross country.
It's
like,
rough.
Cross-world
flight. And those are things, again, you sort of find those things out about yourself. And if you are lucky enough to be in a position where you can afford to even make that decision, I sort of always make the decision to do it.
Every once in a while, I'll be like, you know what? I do want this right now. Like, I was coming back from Zurich a few months ago, and I was just like, okay, pretty hungover and exhausted. And I was like, this is going to be, like, going through Paris, this is going to be a long flight back. I upgraded to business class because, like, the trip was paid for. And I was like, I have
$400
on top of it. And just, like, to have a flat bed in the sky. Unfortunately, there was someone next to me, so when you're both lying down, I had to, like, vault over him, and I was like, this is bad.
It's very intimate suddenly.
Yeah, oh man, it got weird, but no. But yeah, it's like one of those things where I was like, this is at 100% worth the money that I just spent on this,
because
I was actually able to sleep and be comfortable, as opposed to, like, sitting in this sardine can being like, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
Like, it's the difference between cracking and like
it is.
And arriving then
that, again,
home
yeah, it's
safe.
Like if you know that about yeah. yourself, we sort yeah. of if you're if we're ever in a position to have the money to be again to be able to make that decision, it's yeah. nice to know about yourself. Yeah. Like, you know what? I'm not going to regret this. This yeah. is going to be something I need mm-hmm. to do. Okay, moving right along. Next category. Well, let's go to classic MASH. Let's do three dudes or ladies. alternate universe, sexy yeah. times, partner, anything like that, and it can be a character from something. It doesn't have to be like this actor. Blah blah.
Yeah,
blah.
I don't know.
Did you have crushes when you were a teenager? Like, were you like,
yeah,
oh, if only
Leonardo DiCaprio.
I mean, 100%. These are the people I'm going to have
oh, yeah.
to put down.
Oh, no,
right,
was,
let's
I
connect
was,
with your teenager.
I was 12 when Titanic came out, so obviously that was my
favorite.
You were
the prime target.
Oh, my God. Yeah. But I still love him.
Yeah. Well, there you go. He's
even
perfect.
Though I hear he's, like, kind of an ass.
Yeah, but this is, yeah. like, this is almost like, the,
so
it's almost like the 12, Jack character.
12-year-old self. I got to go with Tim Armstrong.
Great. Great.
Which, and I'm sure, do you know who he is? No one knows who.
Maybe I don't.
He's the singer from Rancid.
Oh.
30-year-old Tim Armstrong will forever be my dream man, okay. despite the background of heroin use. And I'm still just like, I touched his back at a show a few
Amazing.
Months ago, and I was just like, oh, I love him.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's got like a massive hobo beard now. And third, I don't, who would be third? Who else is like, I don't know. Who else do people like when
answers.
You're 12? I can't even think of...
God, Leo's a good
this
one.
This is bad. I know,
I mean,
right?
Who do people love? They love Ryan Gosling. They love Brad Pitt.
I don't
Pitt.
Get Ryan Gosling.
They love...
And I never really got Brad Pitt either.
Who did I love when I was that age? Well, oh, I love weird
we,
people.
If we
so.
Can
Not
be
weird,
out of
like,
out of time, I'll go with Buddy Holly.
Oh, yeah.
Buddy
oh, God.
Holly
of
is
you can
one
be
of my
time.
All-time favorites.
100% out of time.
Oh, yeah. And Gene Kelly was also like, yeah. I was devastated when I found out that Singing in the Rain was not a modern movie because I was just like, Gene Kelly is the prettiest
man I've
ever seen.
Do you want to swap out Tim or
no,
Leo?
No, we're
good.
We're keeping
them. You got a good list. Okay.
We're keeping them.
All right. Great. Okay. This next category is a perennial favorite. Three foods or drinks, something like that, like a substance that it has some sort of physical ramification in this reality,
yeah.
Whether it's just calories or an allergy, whatever, in this alternate reality, it's good for you. You can have
right.
it at the snap of your finger, and it can be something that you can own that you're like, oh, I had this one slice of cake once. I've never
yeah.
been able.
Yeah.
It's that, it can be that sort of thing too, like an obscure thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, beer.
Great.
Whiskey.
I'm seeing a pattern.
Yeah, I'm gonna not pick alcohol for my third one.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe like pizza. I don't
yeah.
remember the last time I ate pizza, to be totally honest. I don't eat that much. See, I'm like obsessive about my diet and working out because of my love of beer and whiskey.
Understood.
Yeah, those are things I won't give
up. Oh, delicious pizza. I guess you could see my favorite on there. Okay, next one. Well, let's do alternate universe jobs. And it's sort of the fun part of whatever
yeah.
the job is. It's not like, oh, but then I would have to blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I go that road in my head.
Yeah. Oh, alternate universe jobs.
And it could also be like a thing that you don't do full time, but it could be like, I started this foundation or I
right.
have a cafe that I check in with, but I'm not there
right.
every day in and out.
Yeah. I don't even, this is hard because like I love what I do and like
yeah.
this is the dream job in a weird way. I guess
well,
like,
we don't have to do this category
yeah,
if you don't
I mean,
want.
I could just pick random other things that I don't know.
Yeah. Look, fuck it. Then we're not going to do that category. I want it to be fun for you.
Yeah.
Next one is, well, let's
yeah.
do this then. I bet you'll like this one better.
Okay.
Three skills that you wake up with tomorrow that you know how to do, like Matrix style. You didn't have to learn. You just know.
Play piano.
Great.
Fly.
Great.
Like pilot, not the gift of flight.
Uh-huh.
And another thing I wish I could do. Well, I'm working on this one, but I would love to wake up and like Muay Thai really good.
Great.
Yeah. I've been training for almost 3 years and it's still just like, why can't my body move the way I want it to
God.
Move?
I can't
you know?
Even imagine. I can't
really
imagine how that long that would take me.
Well, because, you know, when you wake up and you see all those comments on the internet and you want to punch things,
yeah.
I learned how to punch
yeah,
things.
Yeah, well, fair
that's,
enough.
That's next up today is
yeah.
I just need like a half hour of some really loud
Attack
music
something.
And to like beat the shit out of something.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take my gloves down to the gym and like
Love it.
Beat up a bag in the corner with
Love
all
it.
The big guys lifting their weights.
That's
it's
great.
It's going to be weird.
That's great. I do enjoy punching. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
Okay. And then next.
Safe punching, to be clear. Safe punching.
Safe punching.
I don't advocate punching people in the face
safe
unless
punching.
It's my coach and we're sparring and we both
right.
have mouth guards in.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That was a good PSA. Okay. Now we'll do like friend/mentor. And this can be from any time as well. Like somebody
yeah.
living or dead. Somebody that you can call up at any time. They're delighted to get your call. They give you advice.
Yeah.
You chat with them. They make you laugh. Whatever. Three.
Carl Sagan.
Done and done.
I don't know if this person would be a good mentor, but I'm going to say Pete Conrad, who the astronaut that my cat is named for. Yeah, I actually have talked to his wife a couple times. She's a doll and she loves that my cat is named for her late husband.
Well, but, then we'll assume he would have been worth your time.
Yeah. And I don't know. I should have a better answer for
that.
That's
really okay.
I can't think of a third. That's weird.
It's not, though. I mean, you can think of a third. It's just you know that you don't have time to think of a third, but I'm still making you come up with a third. That's, that's the difference. What about, like, and again, that this happens frequently, particularly with me, is, like, I'll come up with two, and then for some reason, the third, I put so much pressure on myself that, like, my brain shuts down.
This is going to be a weird one, but I'm going to put Tim Armstrong in there again.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Put him in there.
This man has done a ridiculous amount of like creative stuff that I'm always amazed and
that's
kind of inspired by it. So that would be cool.
Yeah. Do it with pride. I think that's fantastic. Okay. And then last one will be,
I'm going to come out looking like such a weird schizo in this.
Not at all. Not even a little bit. Okay. Final category. See, now I'm doing it and like there's a million categories I could pick.
Right.
Well, I'll do this on, something fictional because usually I dip into this a little bit further, but three movies that you can jump into and just be in that world, interact with the characters. It's not like you're reliving the plot. It's just this sort of like, this is a world that I enjoy watching or that I would enjoy being a part of.
Oh God. When you put it that way, when you put it in terms of a world, I have to go Harry Potter.
Great. Couldn't agree more. Definitely on my list.
Other worlds, because now I'm thinking in terms of like worlds that have been created.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be. It could literally be like The Breakfast Club, or you know, the sort of like, this is my go-to movie that I watch when I'm down, or you know, that becomes like, God, if I could just get into it even more.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Annie Hall.
Great.
And I don't know. Let's go with Grease, actually.
Oh,
it was between that and Mean Girls. And I was going to be like, oh, but that sounds horrible when you're talking about like how weird high school was. Yeah, that movie is kind
of
brilliant.
Have you seen Edge of 17?
No.
You must see it ASAP.
It looked like it would be good, but also like depressing in a weird way.
It's there are things about it. It definitely doesn't pull punches, so to speak.
Yeah. Because I feel like whenever those movies.
Acting is so, and it's very funny. Yeah. It's very funny.
Because I feel like whenever there are those high school movies where it's like the weird loner girl who like doesn't fit in but like ultimately ends up happy in the end, I'm just like, fuck you. Fuck you. I'm in my 30s and I still can't find that, so fuck you.
I don't think this movie will disappoint,
which is why I like binge on shows like Futurama and 30 Rock, where like everyone's a mess.
That's right. It feels good, doesn't it? It's very reassuring.
Yeah, it's like I always say that, like, I rewatch Seinfeld whenever, so my internet sucks, so when I'm uploading a video I can't watch Netflix. So if I'm like working in the evening, I'll just like put on Seinfeld DVDs, and I'm noticing that I like grew up watching Seinfeld, and I subconsciously modeled myself on Elaine more than I realize. I'm just like, oh, I picked a horrible role model.
But a great dancer.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah. I do a pretty good Elaine, which is great because I can't do it because it's a podcast, so.
Oh, one day.
Yeah.
One day.
When you have a video version of this, I'll come back.
I'll
on
get
and
back.
We'll
you'll just
Elaine.
Come and you'll come dressed in character.
Oh yeah, with a big poof.
It's gonna be great.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me when to, you know, this part where you just like, I do a little thing, and so this won't take very long. So, just faster. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this, do some calculations.
All right.
And I will be back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Fantastic.
All right. Okay. Now, I need to rip the Band-Aid off quickly about the fact that you got a shack. That said, your shack is in Paris.
Beautiful.
So you don't need like some huge, you can be out on the streets enjoying Paris. I think I think basically a shack in Paris just means like your apartment is above a bookstore.
Yeah. But like, but at the same time, I feel like a shack, like that kind of thing in Paris would be like the most romantic, sexy little nest ever. That would be like pretty amazing.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. So congrats on that. To get there and anywhere getting around, I want you to know that you have your own personal private jetpack.
Perfect.
I guess you wanted that for shorter distances, so I don't want you to feel
pressured. As long as it can like cross the Atlantic for work in the U.S.
Just
when I have to be
through.
Here,
just zip right on over. So that's awesome. You are also able to, jetpack or no, jump into the world of Harry Potter.
Fantastic.
Very cool.
That's fun.
And that you also are a virtuoso on the piano.
Amazing.
Not bad.
Amazing.
I like the idea of you playing a bunch of beautiful music and then just kicking back and drinking unlimited beers.
Fantastic.
There's a nice thing happening yep. there with your significant other, Tim Armstrong.
Fantastic.
Whose back you've also touched. And that just leaves us with you and your dear friend and mentor, Carl Sagan, discussing the fact that there, in fact, is life on Europa. I guess what you wanted was the mystery solved. So maybe the answer is there isn't life, but certainly you guys are discovering that together.
So Carl and I are working on increasing people's want for that mission so we can make that happen and actually find that life on Europa.
Awesome. Amy, for all of my kind listeners, because I have not a troll among mine, where can people find you?
Best place to find me is on YouTube. That's where I'm most active. It's just Vintage Space. So youtube.com/vintagespace. Weekly, like, straight up education episodes. And I'm diversifying my content right now into like some more ranty vlog style things or opinion pieces. And it's getting more fun.
Right.
So that's good, I guess. Twitter, AST Vintage Space is my handle on Twitter.
AST and, Vintage Space and Vintage Space on YouTube.
Yeah. And same on Instagram, AST Vintage Space. And that's it. I have a Facebook page, but I can't manage all the social.
We've covered that. You guys are not going to put me through that. Okay, amazing. All right. Thank you so much for doing the podcast, Amy. I'm so glad this came together for both of our crazy schedules.
Yeah, this has been fun. It's been a pretty chilled conversation.
Okay, good. I'm very happy to hear that.
Absolutely.
And guys, I will talk to you next time on the podcast. Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.